The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the hizzy on a selection Sunday, post-selection Sunday, Monday morning. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Great.
Brackets filled. You already got your champion.
I filled out a bracket this morning, Gil. I don't know if I would stand behind it with much money, but yes, I filled out a bracket.
Are you one of these people who does multiple brackets?
Depends. That depends year to year.
One of those.
Yeah, depends year to year.
You're one of those.
As opposed to what? Just like one bracket and stand by it for every contest that you enter?
Yeah, man.
I mean, like, there's some, though, that you enter with multiple entries.
Well, here's the thing. We're going to get into bracket strategy here momentarily on the show. We'll do it next segment, which is, yes, there's a way to answer that question. There is a reason to have multiple brackets.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm just referring to those who are in the same contest, and they're like, here's four different brackets. Let me see if I can win this. By the way, we have our own bracket challenge here at VSiN.
That we do.
$5,000 first prize. And that's about against the spread as well. So, again, you got to know the rules of everything you're doing. Are you going to enter that?
Oh, I'll be in there.
You are not eligible for the win, nor am I.
I feel like I've got three unread emails in my inbox that need to be taken care of with things. That's one of them, yes.
You should really check your email. I've been telling you for years now, you should really check your email.
But that's right. Gail's been on me about that for years. The March Madness betting guy, Best Bets. We got to get our best bets in.
Yeah.
Adam Burke working late on that. TBD for the show today.
TBD because he's been working
yeah,
late.
Yeah, I think, poor guy, I think he's sick. I think he was up till like 4 a.m. working on that stuff last night. So,
well, we will have Tim Murray on the show to give his bracket thoughts, how the selection committee did. I'm gonna leave the selection committee stuff for others, like the Tim Murrays and the Wes Reynoldses of the world. Pardon me, Wes is going to be on the show a little later as well to talk both golf and college hoops, because obviously people are outraged in North Carolina. Going, what was it, 1-12 in quad one games and still getting in because the selection committee chair, Bubba Cunningham. We should all be named Bubba, by the way, or get the nickname Bubba at some point. He's also UNC's athletic director, but he was out of the room when they made all the decisions about North Carolina. So fear not, Kelly. There was no shenanigans whatsoever.
He recused himself, right?
They all recused themselves and they leave the room physically when things are discussed about their own school. So anyway, somehow North Carolina still got in without him being in the room. Imagine.
It's like nobody would want to disappoint the chair or something.
Yeah, we'll get Wes is going to have some thoughts on that because Wes is an Indiana guy. So I'm sure he's doubly outraged. But again, you know, those are arguments over the 35th best team in the country or something like that. It doesn't help us win bets. And we'll do brackets and bets all day today. And by the way, at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, that is when Todd Wishnev, Will Hill, and I convene for the Beating the Book Megapod, where we literally will go through every single game in the first round, and we will talk about it from an ATS perspective and also from a brackets perspective. So we will do all of that. First things first, though, by the way, Carl Sack on the NBA as well today. First things first, a update to the formula. Shall we do that first? The tried and true college basketball formula. The formula that has isolated the eventual national champion in almost all cases over the last 29 to 34 years, depending on the category. A couple of them are just over 20 years, but you get it. More than two decades, more than three decades of this. With a rare exception, this has isolated the winner. And let me just say what I said last week once again, which is I've never felt the formula to be more vulnerable than it is this year because of one team. Again, the criteria. Last 34 champs, more assists than turnovers. 32 of the last 34 had a head coach with Sweet 16 experience. File that one away. That's 2014, the exception. 2014, Kevin Ollie with UConn, the Shabazz Napier UConn Huskies. 2023, Danny Hurley and the UConn Huskies. 28 of the last 29 champs went to the tournament with at least three wins versus teams in the top 10% of RPI. That's how long we've been doing this, that we still use RPI in this formula. The exception, the 2014 UConn Huskies. Last 29 champs at a top 75 strength of schedule. And then the two KenPom categories. 21 of the last 22 champs were in the top 20 in adjusted offensive efficiency at KenPom. The exception, the 2014 UConn Huskies. And then 21 of the last 22 champs were in the top 20 in adjusted defensive efficiency at KenPom. The only exception, the only non-UConn exception in all of this, the 2021 Baylor Bears, who finished 22nd. So we've done this 3 weeks. This is our fourth week. This is the Selection Sunday, post-Selection Sunday version of this, our fourth installment. The first 3 weeks, in case you missed it, the three teams this year that qualify for this, very simply, Auburn, Duke, and Houston. Those were the three teams. This week, Auburn, Duke, and Houston still qualify, but we have added two teams. Two teams have entered. We alluded to this earlier at some point last week. Iowa State now qualifies. Iowa State now qualifies for this because they have entered now the top 20 of both adjusted offense and defensive efficiency at KenPom. The problem with Iowa State, of course, here is that now they have injury issues that they're going to have to deal with no matter how long they play in this tournament. So that's the issue with Iowa State, even though they enter the formula. And then the fifth team is Tennessee. Tennessee finally gets there in the offensive adjusted efficiency over at KenPom. So Tennessee is the fifth team that qualifies. Again, this is to win it all. Now, why do I believe that this is the year where the formula is the most vulnerable? And I don't ever remember, Kelly, ever having a year going into the tournament, going into the big dance where I thought, oh, the formula is not going to make it happen. I'm always confident in it. I just think Florida, and I think this is a consensus opinion right now, right? Florida seems to be the best team in the country right now, if you absolutely just hold people to that. And Florida, the only reason Florida does not qualify, because they qualified everything else, is that Sweet 16 head coach exception. That Todd Golden has not coached in the Sweet 16 prior to the year of the tournament in question. And so that's the case right here. But we already have two exceptions to that, as we mentioned with Hurley and Ollie. Could this be exception number three?
Yep.
That's where the formula stands.
I mean, that one you bring up almost every year. It's like that's a trend until it's broken, right? Like, if you got a good team, it gets broken.
Yeah, I mean, again, all these, we're talking, 30 years here, right? Well, generally speaking, the average of all these categories. I mean, it's a rare exception. We'll see. Obviously, Florida has to get there still, six games to win before they can proclaim the formula busted. The other thing is, with this, Joe Pita did a great job of uncovering this year, because one of my quick reactions to the bracket is I think it's really, again, the reason that we do the formula, the reason that it's there is because it's a reminder that while March Madness is rife with upsets the first weekend, right, and specifically Thursday and Friday, but also Saturday and Sunday to an extent as well, that once you get to the Sweet 16 and beyond, it does become a Chalk McChalkerson kind of event. And that's why the formula works in terms of isolating a champion. And then you look at this bracket this year, and I don't know if you saw the ESPN bracketology show afterwards, and they were asking everybody on the panel, Reese Davis was, what are your predictions? And they went to Jay Williams, and they went to Seth Greenberg, they went to Billis. Williams and Billis all had, are you ready for this, when they predicted their Elite Eight? 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2.
Whew.
And when it got to their Final Fours, you know what they had? 1-1, 1-1.
I believe our own Greg Peterson had that as well last night.
So this is the point I want to make about this bracket. It is really, usually your reaction to that kind of prediction in a mainstream media thing, Greg Peterson aside, because we love Greg, but usually when you see that in mainstream media, your reaction is, of course, that's what they picked. It's not going to be right. I don't know. Who are you advancing to the Final Four that's not a one? Who are you advancing to the Elite Eight that's not a one or a two? That's an interesting question this year. And for those who would immediately raise their hand, pardon me, for those who would immediately raise their hand and say, well, how about Michigan State? How about St. John's? Joe Pita uncovered this great thing. Now, Ken Pomeroy, of course, we just referred to Ken Pom. KenPom is so entrenched in the college basketball culture and the sports culture of America that we don't even explain. It's Ken Pomeroy, right? He used to be a weatherman, and then he turned his analytics from evil to good, right, into college basketball. But one of the things, when he used to tweet, he doesn't tweet anymore. Ken Pomeroy doesn't tweet anymore. But when he used to, he talked about how, and we talked with Ed Feng about this last week a little bit, so it dovetails nicely in with what we were talking about here in a numbers game. This is Ken Pomeroy from a few years back. He says, in the 64-team era, that's since 1985, there have been 36 teams. Now, he tweeted this 2 years ago, right? there have been 36 teams to enter the tournament as a 1 or 2 seed that were not ranked in the preseason AP poll. They have combined for 0 Final Fours, averaging fewer than 2 wins per tournament. Now, that year, he said, good luck to Purdue and good luck to Marquette. Well, that year, you may find it interesting to know that, it didn't go well with Purdue and Marquette either. Purdue lost as a number 1 seed to a number 16 seed, Fairleigh Dickinson. We all remember that. And Marquette lost in round 2. As Joe Pita points out, then last year, just to update the KenPom stuff, it applied to Iowa State, who lost in round 3 as a 2 seed. So again, let's review that. Now it's 39 teams. Updating the KenPom tweet, 39 teams that ended up, right, as we can put that tweet up once again, 39 teams here qualify since 1985, since they went to the 64-team field, right, that entered the tournament as a 1 or a 2 seed that were not ranked in the preseason AP poll. And so who are the 2 teams this year that this applies to? Well, the 2 teams that a lot of people think might get to the Final Four that aren't number 1 seeds. But it's Michigan State and St. John's, who are both 2 seeds that a lot of people, when they look at their bracket this year, like, oh, those are the teams that I think have value. Those are the teams that get to the Final Four. Well, if they do, they will have completely broken this, because of those 39 teams that qualify, 5 have made their seed, 0 have ever exceeded their seed. So a number 2 seed that has not been in the preseason AP Top 25 has never gotten to the Final Four since we've expanded to 64 teams. So put that in your old bracket making procedure. We'll come back. More on College Hoops.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Take your betting to a whole nother level with First Bet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or the road to the Kentucky Derby and Preakness, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number 1, stbet.com, and use promo code VSiN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciated. Jack in a Prius 2.0. Had George Mason plus 8.5 preflop. Then late second half, I live bet VCU minus 4.5 and managed to middle with that crazy ending with VCU getting those 2 free throws. Chowda and Mills. That's what Massachusetts does. What a great finish that was. VCU, another one of those teams, right, where it's like, oh, they could go far. But then there's a sort of ceiling where you can't really, can I advance them past a certain, this is the thing with the bracket also just generally speaking, and I was talking about how this might be the year to me where it is the Jay Williams, you know, Jay Billis, you know, oh, it's 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2 in the lead 8, and that's all ones in the Final Four. The way that the brackets came down from the selection committee, VCU has to play BYU in the first round. They could win 3 games or they could get knocked out in the first rounds. Like, those are 2 teams people really liked. And then some of the ones like Auburn, you know, you look at their section, people are like, okay, well, Auburn's not playing very well. Right. But then they had is Iowa State in their bracket where Keyshawn Gilbert is out. So they get that sort of break. And then, you know, you have some matchups where Yale could win and UCSD could take out Michigan. So the way that the bracket also played out, injuries and just the way the selections were, it sort of feeds into some of the top seeds in a way that it might not have otherwise. Also with Alabama, you know, what's the story with Grant Nelson and his knee? That could play in.
Yeah, it feels like some big injury questions. By the way, VCU in the Kelly Bidlin database, I'm going to go with, has made the NCAA tournament 14 out of the last 17 years.
There you go.
That's what it feels like.
Coach Brian, please post the KenPom reference about the polls again. Is he talking about the formula? Torch D, I'm just going to say it. Waiting at night for Greg Peterson's picks this season has been the closest thing to Christmas I've experienced as an adult. Watched him with Matt Eumanns last night, and that show was a banger. Then I heard the Gillionaire on Cashing Out with Joe Serralo afterwards. Hey, listen, what happened was while it was coming out, we had Tim Murray on air with JVT, and they did a spectacular bang-up job. And Tim Murray joins us right now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Appreciate your time, Tim, at 1 Tim Murray, correct? one Tim Murray, whereas Wes Reynolds is at Wes Reynolds one. These guys.
Great work. Great work.
They're always spinning it on us. How you doing, Tim? It's Christmas morning. How you doing, man?
Oh, it is. Yeah. Selection Sunday, one of my favorite days of the year. And, you know, we got the outrage. I was talking briefly to Kelly off air. It was fascinating to watch FanDuel and the odds shift for the bracket and who would be in, who would be out. You know, it was interesting. I wish I had a little bit more insight with some friends over at CBS. I was listening to Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander discuss the selection process over at CBS, and they were told ahead of time that Bubba Cunningham would be accompanied by another member of the selection committee because of the UNC situation, and that should have been the alarm bell that UNC was going to be in the field because Bubba Cunningham is the AD of UNC and ultimately cannot be in the room when UNC is discussed. But yeah, there were some juicy odds out there. I believe you could have got Indiana at around 10-1 to miss the field when the bracket was about to be announced. So it was kind of fun to just keep an eye on the fluctuation of the market. But all of the complaining to the side now, and we've got to focus on 68 teams.
Yeah. What do you mean by accompanied? Bubba Cunningham was accompanied. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so there was another. So when you're the chair of the selection committee, you go on in CBS, CBS Sports Network, et cetera.
Oh, accompanied on air, you mean.
You're by yourself.
Gotcha.
But because North Carolina got in,
yeah,
and they knew there would be questions about that, they had to add someone to that. And they knew that for the last, like, 24 hours. So that was the alarm bell, at least.
Man.
Like, maybe UNC is going to get in after all.
his deputy was there with him.
I was going to say, what were you thinking? Like, there was a police escort, like, detaining him or something?
When he said accompanied, I was like, you know, because Tim is right. Bubba Cunningham is the committee chairperson, but also the AD at North Carolina. When they're talking about your team, you have to be outside of the room. You recuse yourself. But I thought what Tim meant was he was escorted out of the room. That's what I thought. I was like, come here, Bubba. I know you want to stay. Yeah, that was a... That was an interesting interview because Seth Davis did the whole, I know these questions are coming, so it's not me who's asking them,
right,
but they're going to be asked by others. It's like Seth just asked the question about why, you know, does it look like conflict? All right, round one, maybe even the play-in games, right? Maybe even the first four you have some thoughts on, speaking of North Carolina, because now that they're in, right, none of that stuff matters. You know, mainstream media is going to have that discussion. Sports talk radio is going to bust on that, but they're in. North Carolina is, at least in the first four. Do you have a play on that game?
I don't, but in the first four, I'll go to Wednesday night. I imagine not many people were locked in on the MAC tournament in Atlantic City, but Mount St. Mary's was the sixth seed in this conference, and they've lost their two best players due to injury. So they have really just uglied games up, and every game in the MAC tournament for the Mount was a dead under game. And you saw the market move about 5 or 6 points on every single one of their games, and it still went under every number. And guess what, guys? We're seeing market movement again in the Mount St. Mary's American game under. I took 131.5 under last night. It's at 129.5. I think the way that this team has gotten here, which is to really ugly things up, kind of bleed the clock. I would be assuming that we're going to hit another under in this spot. So of the first four, that's the one that I have taken a little bit of a swing on, is a under in Mount St. Mary's and American. That's the DMV showdown.
I was going to say, everybody for the DMV got a good chuckle out of that matchup for sure. Yeah. Okay, to round one then.
Yes, sir.
What were the lines where you first saw them? You're like, ooh, what is that?
Well, I think there's a couple. You always get worried about the team that you know everybody's going to be telling you about at the water cooler on Monday. And that is going to be UC San Diego. I saw them in person on Saturday night here in town. They're as good as, you know, advertised. This is a team that doesn't have a ton of size. But I think for Michigan, when you look at them, you know, you win the Big Ten tournament. Hey, congratulations. You get a 5 seed despite picking up two extra quad one wins over the weekend. And now you've got to face the best 12 seed in the field, a team that very well could have made it as an at-large bid. I do get concerned a little bit for UC San Diego from a size standpoint. This is a team that, you know, is about 6'8 at its peak. And, you know, for Michigan, they've got Vlad Golden and Danny Wolf down low. Danny Wolf, not really a banger, so to speak. He's more of a stretch, even though he's 7 foot tall. But I looked at that line. I'm like, ooh, buddy, people are going to be racing to take UC San Diego. So that was a one that was interesting. And then I think you got to go to the 12-5 in the West region, guys. Colorado State is the favorite over Memphis here. Mm-hmm. And Colorado State, I just tweeted this out. Colorado State, if you look at since February 15th, so over the last month, they're the eighth best team in the country heading into this per Bart Torvik. This is a Colorado State team that me and JVT took a future on to win the Mountain West tournament, and Nico Medved's squad was rolling. Now, you do wonder a little bit about Nico Medved. So from everything that has been reported, it seems like he has got his bags packed to go to Minnesota. So you do always wonder about, you know, the rumors that are out there and the mindset of Colorado State squad after taking care of business. But obviously, you guys were just talking about injuries, you know, Keyshawn Gilbert being the big news that he's out for Iowa State. Tyrese Hunter, the starting point guard for Memphis, did play in the AAC championship game. Now, they still took care of business. They won and covered against UAB, but that's a fascinating spot there where Colorado State, the 12, is actually the favorite over Memphis.
Yeah, 10-game win streak for the Rams after they started 15-9, and you're right about Tyrese Hunter. Fastest pace in the nation for Memphis, by the way, as their two-point dogs. In a bit of a coaching mismatch, would you say, Medved over Penny? As well,
yeah,
this
I would
one.
Say. I mean, I'll give Memphis credit for this, though. When you look at what they did early on in the year, opened the season with a win over Missouri, went out to Maui, beat UConn and Michigan State, beat Ole Miss, beat Clemson on their home floor. They've been able to elevate their game, especially in the non-con early part of the season.
And just to clarify, when you were talking about UCSD and Michigan, and you'll tell me if I got what you were dishing out here, you're saying it feels like it's almost too popular of an opinion on UCSD?
It does a little bit, I think, you know, and that's where, like, you know, you mentioned VCU, and I know we got to hit a break, but like VCU, I'm intrigued by this team quite a bit. You know, BYU, as hot as any team in the country, but this is going to be a challenging matchup. But I'll say this to get out of here. Look at these mid-majors, the 12 through 14s, a lot of one seeds in their conference tournaments. I think this is a very strong mid-major field that could do some damage in the early couple of rounds.
Who'd you end up with in your Final Four? Did you fill out a bracket?
I'm working on it now, but I think ultimately I'm going to have the Cougs of Houston making a pretty deep run as one of the one seeds, but I'll have it finished later today.
Okay. Tim Murray. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it. One Tim Murray. Great job. Him and JVT yesterday with the brackets were coming out. Wes Reynolds next.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. Sharp week. Look, you see the shark bites. I like it. Very nice. It's Gil Alexander.
That was like a live.
Kelly
literally a shark.
So, live looking on a shark is what that was. It's Kelly. By the way, the baseball season starts tonight. You familiar with that? Major League Baseball?
Yeah, in the wee hours of the morning, right?
In the wee hours, the little Dodgers and Cubbies. Nobody has a dime line in baseball here in Vegas.
Really?
It's gone. They're all gone. We're legislating baseball betting out of this place. Well, I tell you, when we get sports betting legalized in this state, like real sports betting, that's going to be something. Very upsetting.
You're right. Wow.
Yeah, I don't like that development. We get tweets at Beating the Book. A. Brown down in Jungle Land. He said, don't worry. You'll be happy to know with all the teams having to go play, quote, at altitude, unquote.
Yes!
Once again this year, a number of tourney games will be taking place on flying hardwoods. Jason H11, yo. That's it. I just felt jealous everyone else was getting in a yo and I wasn't. Jason, ice cold gambler, will vouch for me. I want in on Survivor. He said, Gil will vouch for me. I want in on Survivor. What is he saying? I'm good for it. Trust me, I'm not a degenerate. LOL.
Now, that always makes you feel better when you end the sentence that way. Don't worry, Gil.
Yeah. Shooter McGamblin, yo. Using the Ken Pom angle to fade St. John's and using the wouldn't it be awesome angle, I'm penciling in Mizzou versus Kansas. Sweet 16. Oh, no. Let's go. All right.
You know, Primetime Cowboys won. I forget the exact handle, but sorry. That's
Cowboys underscore Cubs won.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. He listened to me the one time I was like, please start including yo in every tweet. I don't know. Why did today it finally got picked up on? Everybody's doing it today. Great job. Great work out there.
Wes Reynolds is kind enough to join us. He is part of the glue that holds this entire operation together here at VSiN. Wes Reynolds 1, that's the number 1, is where you can find him on Twitter. And he joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Wes, of course, also part of the Long Shots team, which Kelly Bidlin and Matt Bidlin. How you doing? Matt Bidlin.
Yeah.
Kelly Bidlin and Matt Brown. I didn't know you guys were brothers. How you doing, Wes? Good morning.
I'm well, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. Let me start real quick with golf. Rory wins in the three-hole aggregate. He destroys J.J. Spawn in the three-hole aggregate because J.J. got wet on 17. Any takeaways generally from the tournament for you heading forward?
Yeah, look, the Players' Championship, and we talked about it at length on Long Shots last week, you don't really have a lot of consistent form in this event. You could win this event and then miss like four cuts in a row the next 4 years. So, you know, we talked a lot about how the Masters is kind of like the most predictive of the golf events. Guys that continuously play well. Players, not so much, but, you know, one takeaway, I guess, for Rory is if he's going to hit his irons like this, this is going to be the year of the Rory. And that's been kind of the drawback with Rory in recent years. We know how great he is off the tee. He's probably the best pure driver of the golf ball. Not that he's the longest hitter, even though he's one of the longest, but he's the best driver, I think, consistently of the golf ball in the game. But the irons can be a little bit out of whack. But third this week in the field on strokes gained approach, I believe he gained over 8 strokes on approach for this event. So if he's going to do that, then he's going to have a big year like Scotty had last year.
Yeah, Wes, we talked a little bit about it on the podcast last week. I think the only other note kind of taken away from a Rory win is we discussed how since they moved the tournament to March, how it's been all major winners that are winning this tournament. Now, do you take anything away from that with Rory getting it done again this year?
Yeah, think it very well could be that you're seeing a lot of these. Shorter shots. Scotty, obviously, the last 2 years. Rory, I think, would he open around 8-1 on market average this week. So in the past, you've seen some bombs. You've seen a lot of triple digit guys win this thing. But Rory just in very good form and obviously peaking for the Masters. And that's going to be the running storyline over the next month until we get to Augusta. Rory's still trying to complete that career grand slam, which he's still been trying to do, I believe, since 2014. So it's been now over 10 years. Mm-hmm. He's been trying to win the Masters because he had already won the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, and the PGA. So is this finally the year? I think that's going to be the big story heading into Augusta week.
All right. To college basketball, you're in Indiana guy. We spoke about this a little off air. I expected you to be upset about Indiana. You said you're less so upset about Indiana being left out than you are North Carolina being put in.
Yeah, look, I think North Carolina does not belong at all in this tournament. They were 1-12 in quad one games, and the committee kind of tends to talk out of both sides of their mouth, which they really do every year. It doesn't matter who's the chairman. It just so happens that the North Carolina athletic director was the selection committee chairman this year. So I'm not accusing of any impropriety. I would never do that.
No.
But, you know, because he left the room, right, when North Carolina got discussed. But with Indiana, they had plenty of opportunities. If they win probably one more of those games in February, they're probably in the tournament. They have a lame duck coach. It's easy to leave this team out because Mike Woodson, of course, is not going to be back. Indiana's looking and really enveloped in their coaching search right now. But I thought Indiana had a better profile than North Carolina because over the last 3 weeks, Indiana had beaten Michigan State on the road, by the way, the Big Ten regular season champion, and Purdue, who the selection committee by the seeding process is telling us those are two of the top 16 teams in America. Meanwhile, North Carolina's best win was against UCLA, who's a 7 seed. So I didn't think North Carolina should be. And I thought West Virginia had the biggest gripe having all those quad one wins. I think they had 6 of them going 4-2 in quad one games without Tucker DeVries, by the way, the Drake transfer, who's the coach's son down there in Morgantown. So I would have personally had West Virginia and Indiana in over North Carolina and Xavier, but the selection committee did not agree. So let's play the games.
Maybe this happens every year, but did you get the impression when the brackets were announced, did you have a lot of moments, or at least a few moments, where you were like, oh, man, I would have loved to have advanced VCU deep, but, oh, they get BYU. Oh, man, I would have loved to advance UCSD, but they get Michigan. I felt like that was sort of the biggest theme of the brackets for me, where I'm like, oh, this does feel like a lot of teams are going to get sort of cut out from under. Now, a double-digit seed has gotten to the Sweet 16 almost, I want to say, almost every year here. I want to get the exact stat. At least one double-digit seed has reached the Sweet 16 since 2008. A couple years ago, it barely survived. We only had one. But we always have some double-digit advance. He probably will to the Sweet 16. But when you look at these brackets, did they cut a lot of these teams out from under their selves if they had gotten a different sort of path?
And, you know, I think a little bit. I think that that's certainly accurate. But I think that the seeding is really what I have gripes with a lot of these teams, these teams that are dramatically underseeded. Like you look at Gonzaga. Now, I don't have them as a top 10, like the metrics guys all love these guys, Ken Pomeroy and Torvik and all these guys have them in like the top 10. But you look at a Gonzaga and they're an 8 seed. They're a true, I think, 5 or 6 seed, even though they are down from their usual standards. But they didn't do Houston any favors in that draw, where Houston gets by the 116, and then you get potentially Gonzaga in the second round, who looks like they're underseeded. Then you potentially could get a Clemson, who's probably the best of the 5 seeds, and then Tennessee down at the bottom. So, you know, some of these teams got the easier draw. I think Duke kind of got the benefit of the doubt, and they've got a relatively easy draw, I think, for a 1 seed, while Houston got a tough one. But yeah, it's tough to. You're kind of trying to find that needle in the haystack. It's like, what is that on the Price is Right, Gil, the punch out game, mm-hmm. where you only get like a couple punches and you're trying to get the grand prize. That's what you're trying to figure out, which double digit seed is going to advance into the Sweet 16. I don't think it's going to be overwhelmingly chalk heavy, but I don't think that we're necessarily getting chaos in this bracket this year either.
By the way, back to Gonzaga, and let's get to some of these numbers. Georgia catching 6. Does that seem like a lot to you?
It does. Georgia's a good team. They got a kid, Asa Newell, that's probably, he played at Montverde Academy with Derek Queen at Maryland, with Liam McNeely, who's the star at UConn. How the hell did that team ever lose in high school basketball? Seriously. Oh, by the way, they didn't, because they were number one in the country. Asa Newell, probably a first-round draft pick. Georgia's got some athletes. The former Florida Gator coach that is now the Georgia coach, they got some athletes. So yeah, with Gonzaga, I'm like, I'm not just going to totally push them through. I may advance them in my bracket, but I think everybody kind of sees that as like a foregone conclusion that we're getting Gonzaga in Houston. Maybe not so fast. I might like the Bulldogs here, but with the SEC, they're the best team. They were the best conference all year. Of course, 14 teams get in the field of 68. So you got to be careful with like overvaluing or undervaluing conferences, because how many years have we crapped on the ACC where they've been horrible in the regular season the last few years, and then they do well in the tournament, and then all the ACC guys come out and beat their chest like, see, we were really good when they were really terrible. And they were historically terrible this year, getting the 14. In. And another thing about seeding, how does Louisville get an 8 seed when they were like top 15 in the country?
I know.
And yet North Carolina gets in the tournament. I'm like, if Louisville's an 8 seed, then North Carolina is like out of the tournament altogether. But that's what happens. But yeah, the ACC historically low. And I know you grew up in that part of the country, Gil. This is not your old ACC that you grew up when you were back in the district.
Ooh, no, not even close. What is this? The fewest ACC teams since what year is this now? I want to say it's since 2016. The fewest ACC teams. I'll have to look on that. Maybe
doesn't go further back than that.
Or 2013. There was one year where it was really bad. Okay. The ACC, but that's the exception. By the way, again, what Wes was alluding to, the SEC, of course, a record 14 teams in the field. I think that's a record by a few. 14 SEC teams. In fact, so many that you have 3 potential SEC versus SEC matchups in round 2, in the round of 32.
That's
crazy. Because you can't spread it out enough, right?
Yeah.
More with Wes Reynolds. We'll get his thoughts on what was the first line that came up yesterday, first betting line where he was like, oh, that is not correct. Let me bet into that. That and more is top three, let's say, on those. Wes Reynolds right here on the Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.